Well, welcome to After Hours, the first full 2 hour After Hours in as long as I or Brett or Krista can remember. But it will be worth your while. I'm sitting here with Petra Van Noyes and Andy Brown, a couple and a leading, and not just a leading couple. I think of, you know, Judy Roberts and Greg Fishman and a few others, but they are a leading couple on the Chicago jazz and music scene. They have a new CD out. It's great to see you two.
Great to see you, Rick.
Yes.
Now, you laughed when I said, oh, the high school sweethearts. The way in which you guys met is so beyond charming to me. It's in Cincinnati. It's Cincinnati School for Creative and Performing Arts. And you, it was almost love at first sight for one of you, was it not?
And that one was me.
Because you thought he was cute.
Oh, well he still is cute. Look at him right now.
If only they could see me through the air.
But you, at the time, Petra, you aspired to a musical theater career, did you not?
That's correct. Yeah, I was doing mostly musicals and dancing, mostly, yeah. So... Andy was actually not playing jazz at that time
blues. Either.
He was playing blues. Good memory.
Yeah. Well, when you read an old story, it brings back, it doesn't just bring back pleasant memories, it brings back facts, too.
Good.
Andy, remind me when you changed and what happened to draw you away. Maybe you've never been totally drawn away from blues, but you began to concentrate on jazz. Why?
That's a great question. I mean, when I started playing, middle of high school, playing guitar, I just was interested in rock and roll, Jimi Hendrix, Eric Clapton, Jeff Beck, you know, R.I.P., all those great players, and they would talk about the great blues players, and then the great blues players like B.B. King and Albert King, and all those people would talk about the great jazz players like Charlie Christian and Django Reinhardt, and so it took me a while. I mean, I would hear jazz and... You know, when I was in my rock phase, I think it was kind of boring or just very intellectual. It took me a while to hear the warmth and beauty. And I mean, it didn't take that long, but a couple years. And then I just kind of took to it like a fly takes to air.
What is the difference, if you can characterize the difference between blues guitar and jazz guitar?
That's a good question. I mean... I'd say jazz is a little more sophisticated. I mean, jazz is kind of an interesting blend of African-American music and Western classical music.
Yeah,
you know, jazz is sort of this spot in between the two. So all the great early jazz players were inspired by the great classical composers. And I think it's sort of a fusion of blues and maybe classical music, I guess. So, so a lot of it's very similar. I mean, when I have students now and people who come and say they've never really heard jazz, you know, I tell them just listen to it like you would rock or pop or anything that you like and just try to find the beauty and the romance and the soul and all that kind of stuff, you know.
And Petra, how were you drawn to it? I mean, you're a showbiz gal and all of a sudden you are now... One, to my mind, one of the great jazz singers around, as you will hear during this
Thank
hour.
You. Well, I guess I don't. Now I don't make so much of a distinction at all. It's just all honestly, just all music, kind of what Andy was saying. But I was drawn to it because a lot of the I liked. When I was in musical theater, I liked all the older shows, like the Rodgers and Hammerstein, the classics.
Yeah, sure.
Which is kind of where I am with jazz as well. A lot of other singers might do more contemporary styles, or they might kind of mix in a more contemporary even sound of their voice. I always liked the old stuff.
No,
I don't know what it is about me. Even when I was a little kid, before I knew what jazz was or what the difference with show singing and jazz singing, I just liked anything that now that it occurs to me now sounded like it was from like the 1940s or the 30s or the 50s, I guess, somewhere in that range.
Do you two both have any trouble with, I have ever had trouble with, having to pigeonhole different kinds of music that I'm strictly a jazz person. I don't do this. I don't do that. Is that you two seem to have a sort of open-mindedness about what you do and what you play.
It's, yeah, we do. I mean, it's hard. I think, I don't want to speak for Petra, but, you know, for when you're a, one of the more controversial things in jazz is jazz singing. I mean, that's an endless debate. You know, was Frank Sinatra a jazz singer? You know, is Mel Torme, you know, a jazz singer? Is Rosemary Clooney a jazz singer? You know, and like, some people, I mean, you know, some people like to argue and some people like to debate just for fun. I always find those conversations kind of limiting. I mean, you know, the CD that we've recently put out was a tribute to Julie London. She'd be another one. Like, some people would say, oh, she's not a jazz. That's not jazz. She's not a jazz singer. So in some people's mind, a jazz singer, you have to sort of scat sing, you know, shooby dooby dooby.
Right.
And do lots of really vocal, you know, gymnastics and stuff. And some of the greatest singers did that so well, like Ella Fitzgerald.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah Vaughan.
Sure.
People. So, but there's that sort of, I think the view of what a jazz singer is has actually gotten much narrower as the years have gone by. You know, people have that Ella Fitzgerald, Sarah Vaughan picture, and anything that's not that is immediately like not jazz in their mind or something.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
So the pigeonholes get strange. I mean, and it's the same for me. I mean, one of the best compliments I think we ever get, and I think we both get this somewhat regularly, is, I thought I hated jazz, but I really like this. You know?
Well, I have ever been one, too, that all it takes, like, if someone comes in and I don't even care if it's country music, does I hate country music or I hate jazz or I hate blues, yeah, I will argue with them, look, give it 10 minutes. Let me play you two songs that are certifiably country or blues or jazz, and it's 10 minutes out of your life that could enrich the rest of your life. You will hear these two play from their new CD, Lonely Girl. We'll talk about how that CD came to be, because it's hard getting a CD these days. There are a lot of performers who say, why bother? Because people are streaming everything. And what's the point? And it's a beautiful, beautiful CD.
Thank you.
And I also want to know, why Julie London? We'll be back in a couple minutes. Welcome back. I am with Petra Van Noyes and Andy Brown, and we're talking about their latest CD. It's called Lonely Girl. It's kind of an homage to Julie London, who is, you know, when you think jazz singers, she's not on the top of that list, but man, this is a great, great CD. What's the seed of this CD? How did this come to be?
This came to be, actually, strangely wasn't our idea, even though we're major Julie London fans. And in fact, Julie London was probably the first singer that got me into singing quote unquote jazz. So it all worked out well. There's a Japanese label that has reissued all of our other CDs, and they...
How did that happen? Some Japanese entrepreneurs.
Yeah, somebody we knew.
Somebody in Japan found me online. This is maybe 10 years ago or something. And he was kind of a Japanese producer and recommended me to this company that they mostly are in the business of re-releasing both old things, like a lot of very famous old recordings that just didn't get released onto CD or didn't get released in Japan, at least. And then they also do some newer people. So they re-released our other CDs, and they decided that they wanted... an original CD, not a re-release, but a release in Japan. And they came up with the idea of Julie London, because
For you two, that's very flattering,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, and Julie London, you know, for those listeners who aren't familiar, I mean, she was an actress who was also a wonderful singer. And her husband, when she was just an actress, I believe it was Bobby Troup.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was her husband who wrote Route 66 and all that stuff. And he said, you got to hear Julie sing, and Julie, you got to get out there. And so her first record was a real landmark. It's called Julie Is Her Name. And it was her with just upright bass and then Barney Kessel on guitar.
Oh, wow.
And so for guitarists, it's an especially important recording, like how to accompany a singer by this record, Barney Kessel with Julie London, Julie Is Her Name. And so that set like this whole, that really made her a singing star, and it set this whole genre of a singer with a very light background, like just guitar and bass or something, as opposed to...
I have to think. I mean, her most famous song is Cry Me a River.
That's correct. That's the first song.
And in the movie, it was a 7-year itch. What movie did she haunt Tom Ewell?
Right. I'm forgetting the name of the movie, but I know what you're talking about. Right.
She haunted Tom Ewell. He would see her walking down the stairs. And she was, as politically incorrect as it is, she was quite a dish, as they say. That shouldn't be a politically incorrect description of someone. Did you know all of her music? Or were you surprised by some of the things that wound up on the CD? I certainly was.
I think we have quite a bit of her music.
Were you performing her together?
Yeah, I mean, we did a lot of songs. You know, she mostly sang what we would call standards.
Sure.
So some of the versions we had learned verbatim years and years ago, you know, again, it was a landmark record. And one of the ones I was playing around the house, you know, 25, 30 years ago when Petra was first getting into it and wanting to sort of jump from musical theater to so-called jazz singing, this was an album and a couple others that she did that were very similar that I was playing all the time at home. And so, you know, we had all this stuff in our head, and then the label, you know, it was during the pandemic and they wanted us to do something brand new, and we had been doing a lot of live streams, you know, as people did during the pandemic.
Of course.
So I had gotten a fair amount of expertise, which I had never had, going with audio recording for these live streams, getting a good sound and all that. And so when the label suggested this to us, we said, oh, maybe we can record it just the two of us at home. And, you know, they did suggest a few songs that I don't think we had ever done. And one of them is The End of the World.
Yeah.
And that was one we didn't know, and we weren't sure if we could pull off. But
what a wonderful kind of a freedom for you two, think.
It was great.
Yes?
It was by far the easiest, most affordable, and most relaxing CD that I've ever made. And it was, honestly, I like the sound that Andy captured. He got really good at home recording on my voice way more than any other recording engineer.
Let's listen to a bit of one. What would you like? Krista Flores will be.
Want to do The End of the World?
Yeah.
Just for fun.
What cut is that?
That is cut number 4.
Cut number 4. Krista Flores is going to play it, and you are going to listen to it. That's fascinating. Fascinating. That's really, really lovely.
How many
cuts on this CD?
There are 13 cuts.
And how are they promoting it in Japan?
Well, they still have Tower Records.
Wow.
And they still have physical CD stores, not just Tower Records, but other physical CD stores. And these people still buy CDs. Although I have noticed, because we do get the royalty notices and whatnot, that it's mostly over there even more digital than physical CDs even there. But I think that, unlike here, there are still people that buy physical product. And in fact, they even have a lot of music stores, I've heard, where, like the old days here, there's a listening lounge.
Oh,
like you can put
neat.
On CDs or LPs.
Oh, I love that.
We have to move to Japan, right?
The next step is to tour Japan.
That would be,
you know, I know the world is tightened, and I want to talk about that too after the news. The ability to perform is one thing, but getting the crowds back is another, and I have some philosophical ideas about people not going out. And I, for those of you who are scared to go out, I've had COVID, as many of you know, and was hospitalized with COVID.
Right.
And I am not scared to go out, having had it as bad as you could possibly have it without dying. And I want to talk about that, how your sense. I mean, you played earlier today, right?
Right.
Petra?
Mm-hmm.
And Andy, you're playing tonight.
Correct.
At Andy's,
That's right.
So I just want to get your sense. We'll hear more music, too. Don't kid yourselves. about what the state of live jazz is these days, because it has changed. The whole world has changed in the last 2.5 years.
For sure. Yeah. It's definitely.
But the whole notion of, is Pete Miller still open?
Sadly, in Evanston. They closed right before the pandemic. I mean, you know, and who knows if our experience can speak for, you know, the state generally. But, it's definitely a confusing time, I would say, when you're in the performing arts. You know, all you have to do is flip open any newspaper and you read about, you know, Broadway or the restaurant business, yep, or the music business. You know, some of the music business did well, I think, this past summer, like rock shows where mm-hmm. young people were going. But the music that we do, and I think classical music, is really suffering. You know, it's just people are unsure what they should be
yeah,
doing.
Yeah, I want to talk about the nature of the crowds who are coming to see you. In many ways, I think the upside is that you may be cultivating a new
yeah.
generation of listeners, which I think would be fantastic.
But me too.
You two are incredibly, incredibly talented. So, ladies and gentlemen, please stay tuned. You will get some more music. You will get some more conversation. And you'll have a CD to buy.
There you go.
Thanks. I was talking off the air. Thank you. Welcome back. I'm still with Petra Van Noyes and Andy Brown talking. We just finished talking about their CD. We'll bring it up again and you'll hear some more. We're talking about performing and what it's been like over the last almost three years. Did you lock down for a while? You must have. I mean, places closed and shut down. And
yeah, I mean, I'd say from March 2020 into about June, there was absolutely nothing. And then in the summer of 2020, there was a little bit till the fall. And then the fall was shut down till the spring of 2021. And then it's pretty much, you know, in terms of legally places being allowed to be open, that's since, you know, March of 2021, I think it's been. That's been happening. But yeah, I mean, it's been an adventure. I mean,
well, you must share this. I mean, with the, you know, the community of you performers is a very solid, nurturing, sort of understanding one. And you must have shared fears of
one big therapy group.
Yeah, I mean, of course it is.
Yeah. And I mean, and everybody's, you know, there's so much involved in it. There's so much politics. There's so much conflicting information, and you know, everybody, I think the politics of it really from the very beginning made it almost difficult to talk about because just of so many different ways of looking at it. And you know, everybody wanted to do the right thing. I mean, by the nature of it, your job as a performing artist is to be the person that attracts human beings into a closed indoor space,
right,
where they usually take drinks and eat food. And so the whole nature of it, like, almost in some ways became, you almost felt like you were being vilified, like you're a bad person for encouraging people doing this bad behavior.
Oh.
And you know, it was just really, really surreal. It was like a science fiction movie, because that's your whole job. We've been doing this our whole lives since we were teenagers, trying to get people off the couch and mm-hmm. into the
place. Into some place.
Mm-hmm. And so all of a sudden those people were bad who were doing that or who were coming, and everybody was judging, and there was so much encouragement in the media to, like, judge people or
sure.
criticize people.
Yep.
Or, and it just was very, I mean, to be honest, the therapy group is ongoing. I don't think a lot of us, and not just performing artists, have even begun to process what we've all collectively had to go through. I mean, obviously people like yourself got really, really sick, and unfortunately so many people lost their lives. I mean, it's a horrible, horrible thing. And there's, you know, also when you're a performing artist, you feel kind of guilty. Like, you know, you don't want to complain too much because some people had some real problems.
Of course, of course. But I think that's been the case throughout life
yeah.
and throughout
yeah.
history. There is always something. And my feeling is that there are many people who are still afraid of going out to participate in life.
Yeah.
You know, I know you can watch stuff on TV, and I know you can watch more movies. And you know, my brother, who was in the entertainment business, is crazy now in Australia, but he's crazy for going to movie theaters. I mean, he wants to. He is
yeah, we are like
desperate,
mm-hmm.
desperate to be out. And that mm-hmm. human, what you realize, I think, is human intercourse is of incredible value.
Yeah.
Human intercourse is human. It is humanity.
Thank you. No, you're know? Right. No, good mean, point. Good point.
Yeah, and it's
scary.
You know, you're always, if you're a performing artist, you're always in a something of a battle with all these you know, competition type things, you know, television, radio, social media, the internet, whatever it is. And so part of the whole nightmare of COVID and the era that we're in somewhat is the sort of explosion of social media, yeah, information that's may or may not be factually correct, and everyone having an opinion and everyone getting fired up and more fired up. And so, you know, it just, it's always a hard sell to say, hey, leave your house and come hear some jazz. And then when, yeah, you throw this on top of it, I mean, it's definitely been very challenging. And I mean, like you said, I think, you know, getting out, interacting with other people, in my view, not just because of my job, but I think that's like, we were supposed to not do that until it was okay to do it. And then when it was okay to do it, I sort of thought the game was like, okay, now we're going to go back with a vengeance.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And where I sort of have issues with what's going on now is there's such a gray area, and you almost can't even say, even now, encouraging people to go out, is you almost feel like there's something wrong with that, or you're, maybe it's not quite the way things really are, but I don't know. I think everybody's confused.
Well, and it's also, you know, what people are missing. What people are missing. I mean, that is an aspect of life. I mean, I knew people before COVID who enjoyed staying home and watching, you know, streaming movies all the time. And I said, well, that's crazy. Go out.
Exactly.
Go out somewhere. Go out somewhere and see. And it's live performance, I think, whether it's theater or anything else, that is the essential thing of life. Let's hear a couple more minutes of another song from that fantastic CD called Lonely Girl.
Well, speaking of going out, let's put on number 5, which is called Something Cool. This is about a lady sitting at a bar.
Well,
talking to just about anybody who will listen, even if it means talking to herself.
Well, I always like those kind of ladies. My mom was like that. My mom was very much like that. Thanks, Krista. All right, you two. Petra Van Noyes and Andy Brown play all over the place. You've been hearing stuff from their CD. Petra's website is Petra, P-E-T-R-A, sings.com. Andy Brown's is andybrownguitar.com. You can get other CDs. You can read about and see where they're playing, because you guys still are playing a lot.
Yeah,
a lot.
We're really lucky. We play together every Wednesday at a place called Hemingway's Bistro, which is right in beautiful downtown Oak Park on Oak Park Avenue. It's a great French restaurant. We play duets 6 to 9 every Wednesday.
Oh, how nice. Oh,
and
nice.
We play with our Recession 7 band quite often. That's a 7-piece band with Eric Schneider, Russ Phillips, Art Davis, and the horn section. We'll be at the Jazz Showcase February 28th, which is a little ways off, but that's, yeah, a Tuesday night. And we're usually
people have to plan.
They have to plan. Yes. You know, there's so much to do. We're at Winter's Jazz Club with the Recession 7 quite a bit, and Petra plays at Le Piano every Saturday with a wonderful pianist named Dennis Luxon. They do a late night set from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. every Saturday, and
wow.
I'm lucky. I've got some nice steady gigs. I play at the Green Mill actually twice a week, every week, the Green Mill at Lawrence and Broadway. I play solo guitar behind the bar every Thursday for cocktail hour. That's from 5 to 7:30. And then I play there every Monday with a wonderful fellow guitarist named Joel Patterson. Mm. And we do 2 guitars with bass and drums. And we do all kinds of Western swing, blues, some Hawaiian music. He brings a steel guitar. We do a little Santo and Johnny.
There's nothing like Hawaiian music in the wintertime in Chicago.
Right at the Green Mill.
Well, I'm
exactly.
So pleased to hear this. This seems very...
Yeah.
Active.
Yeah.
We have been really active.
And I'm on my way. When we're done talking, I'm going to head to Andy's Jazz Club where I play with my own quartet every Sunday night. So
every Sunday night? What time?
We have sets right now at 7 and 9:15.
This show works out perfectly.
It works
for
out
you.
Perfect.
We'll
you
be
should
here
come
once
in here
a
every
week.
Yeah, well, I'm not on every week, but you should come in when I'm doing this.
Yeah, it feels good to be performing for both of us. And it most importantly feels good to see people coming, and you really have a sense. I was mentioning to you off the air, I mean, for both of us, you know, as performers, you hold yourself to a high standard and you're always concerned about, are you really doing a good job and all that? And you're sort of in your head sometimes. But ever since this whole situation with COVID and now being able to be in rooms with people again, you really recognize what your true purpose is, which is to be bringing people together in a community and a collective experience of joy and togetherness. And it sounds kind of corny, but like when I go to Andy's, They have people in there from all over the city, all walks
of
life.
All over the world, too.
And then all over the world.
That's a nice thing.
And there was nothing about it on TV. There was nothing about it, you know, in any kind of media, really.
Mm-hmm.
It's just there. Somebody told them to come in, and all of a sudden we're in a room together having some laughs.
Mm.
And, you know, having a good time, drinking, eating, laughing.
Now, does Petra go there, or does she go home to take care of the cats? Or she at home with the
cats?
She
usually goes home and takes care of the cats.
But the pandemic has also taught us how much we want it. We had this joke during the height of the pandemic when we'd be playing a lot of outdoor gigs in 40-degree weather, you know, those days. And Andy would always look over at me and say, "How bad do you want it?" And that became like our slogan. But that is something that I've learned from all of this, is that it turns out we want it really bad.
Yeah.
And we want to be playing, and we want to enjoy life and be part of humanity.
It's always been palpable to me, the relationship between performers and audience. They really, some people think, well, you know, is the performer's doing everything? The audience, there's a conversation going
for
there,
sure.
Don't you think? And a relationship in any venue with any performer, you two must feel it.
Completely. That's what was missing during the live streams. Sure, we all hobbled something together and survived, but singing to a computer is not like singing to live people.
Yeah. Because you can't see them, and you can't see the reaction.
And unfortunately, then you're just looking at yourself, which is even more terrifying.
Which is even scarier.
That was one of the scariest things for me about the pandemic, outside of the health concerns we all had, was like the stoppage of art. I mean, it sounds dramatic, but I mean, you know, I used to just lay awake thinking there's no theater, there's no movies, there's nobody in a coffee house talking about a book, there's no music on the whole planet almost. I mean, that to me, and that's why I feel like there's some processing of this. You know, I'm sort of in a rush because of my job and everything to want it to all just be over, and some people want it maybe go on like a lot longer than maybe it needs to, and who knows what the real answer is. But certainly processing it, I feel like that's been way undervalued. Like, that was crazy to have no music, no art, no movies,
no readings,
no readings, no poetry, no dance, no coming together. I mean, to me, it's like, man, I mean, that's a dramatic thing that, like, is not to be taken lightly, that I feel like, you know, in the chatter and the endless bickering, and it just, the lack of concerted effort to process that, to me, is almost remarkable in and of itself.
But I also get the sense, and just listening to you talk, is you two are very hopeful people.
Yeah.
We always have been like that. I always say it's kind of strange because I'm of Dutch heritage, and we're very practical people. So aside from deciding to be a jazz singer, which is completely impractical, I'm very practical within that decision. Like, I think we both are. We just try to do what we can with what we're given. And I learned during the pandemic, I mean, Andy was the one who really kicked it into gear with these live streams and everything. And I always say to him now, like, if there were a war, like, I would follow you. Like, you're the general. Whatever you tell me to do, I'm doing.
If we're invaded by people from another planet.
Yes.
Andy, where are you?
Andy is very calm and logical in a moment of terror and panic, like, in a way that I'm not. I'm a very emotional thinker, and he's very clear-headed and very practical.
You two are really something. I've known you for more than a decade and have admired you for
likewise, admire you even more now.
Let's end, if it's okay, with a bit of Cry Me a River.
Of course. Yeah. That's the last track.
That's the final track, 13. And I thank you. And you, ladies and gentlemen, will be able to read about these two in an upcoming edition of your Sunday Tribune. It'll be great to write about you again, because I already have the background about how you met and the cute little. It is a beyond meet cute thing with these two. So go play. Walk over. Go play at Andy's. And I will see and talk to you soon. And thanks for coming in.
Thanks Rick.
Great to be here.